Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike. We are broadcasting live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios on this Monday, March 26th, and we got a great show for you today. Later on in the podcast, I will be joined by our very own DolphinsTalk.com blogger, Brett Legassi, as we break down the tight ends and the linebackers in this upcoming draft. Brett is our in-house draft expert, draft guru, so to speak. He breaks down all these players, spends a lot of time, watches a lot of film, reads up on all these guys, and does a ton of research on all the draft prospects. So it's nice to pick his brain here and get his thoughts on the tight ends and linebackers in this upcoming class, because as we know and as we have spoke about on this podcast, those are the biggest two needs for the Miami Dolphins heading into the draft. Last week when we had on Brett, he broke down the offensive linemen and the wide receivers. Yep. And this week we talk about tight ends and linebackers. So be on the lookout for that later on in the show. But first I want to go over a few news items. Two Miami Dolphins have found new homes and have signed with new teams. First and foremost, safety Michael Thomas has signed a 2-year deal with the New York Giants. The financials on this were not announced, but Michael Thomas is now a member of the New York Giants. And like I said last week, or maybe the week before actually, when the Miami Dolphins signed Walt Akins, I thought the handwriting was on the wall that Michael Thomas wouldn't be back, because Walt Akins and Michael Thomas are pretty much the same player, in that they are great on special teams, but when it comes to actually playing safety, neither one are all that special or all that great. So there's probably only a need for one of them, not both at this point, as the Miami Dolphins move forward, because when either one is on the field playing safety, it really is a liability. And you can carry one of those guys because they are great on special teams, but to carry two just is not required or needed. So not a surprise here that Michael Thomas was not retained by the Miami Dolphins. The other thing I'll say about this, and I'm not going to harp on it, is that one has to wonder if what Michael Thomas did the past few years in taking a knee, and I'm not taking a stance one way or another, saying he shouldn't have. To me, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just wondering if him taking that knee before every game played a factor in any way with Miami retaining him for 2018 or not. You do have to wonder. Obviously, there were the comments from Stephen Ross a few weeks back in the New York Daily News, in which he said in 2018 he wanted all of his players to stand. And then, of course, 10 minutes later, he retracted it and said, oh, no, I didn't really mean it that way. Yeah, you probably did, and you probably just let the cat out of the bag. So the three guys last year who kneeled were Michael Thomas, Julius Thomas, and Kenny Stills. And only one of them is coming back this year. Now look, Julius Thomas was a horrible tight end last year. So it's not a he was cut not because of the knee, just because he couldn't play and be productive. When it comes to Michael Thomas, again, don't know if that was in any way, shape, or form played a factor here, but it might have. And we'll never know the truth. It might be one of those things that just sort of unspoken that, let's move on here. But and either way, he's gone. And Michael Thomas, wishing him the best of luck with the Giants. We had him on the podcast last year. Super nice guy. Great guy. He did, and he still does, a ton of good community work off the field, trying to build up the communities in South Florida and help out underprivileged kids. Just an all-around great guy. A great guy. I cannot say enough about Michael Thomas. So, in that regard, he will be missed, because just one of the good guys in the NFL, and he did a ton of work in South Florida off the field to help a lot of people and raise a lot of awareness. So he will be missed in that way, and I wish Michael Thomas nothing but the best with the Giants. The other big signing was Ndamukong Suh. He signed a one-year deal with the Rams. 1 year, $14 million. Now, I know on the podcast that dropped Sunday. On Sunday's show, when I had on Antoine Staley from USA Today, we sort of joked and had some fun with this. And the, please don't go to the Jets. Please don't go to the Jets. And if you're going to sign anywhere, sign with the Rams, because odds are Miami will never have to face them, and it'll be fine. So Sue did sign with the Rams, and he will not come back to haunt Miami, at least in 2018. It's just a one-year deal, $14 million. And look, the Rams have a defensive line that will be absolutely hell for the rest of the NFC West and probably the NFC in general. So Sue will be out there closer to home. Like I said, when this all happened, once he was released, if I go, odds are he will sign with a team out west just to be closer to home, because he does like to spend so much time in the Pacific Northwest. So Sue is now a Ram, and next year this time he will be a free agent. So I don't think a reunion in Miami is possible, but you never know. Stranger things have happened, and next year this time Sue will be a free agent. In other news, it was reported late Monday afternoon by Field Yates of ESPN that the Miami Dolphins worked out veteran kicker Blair Walsh. And in 2017, Walsh was the Seattle kicker. He's been around a few years, obviously a veteran. For a few years, he probably was one of the best kickers in the NFL, or like the most consistent. Then he had that terrible miss in the playoffs a few years back. And since then, he's sort of never been the same guy. But Miami did bring in a veteran kicker, because as I said on Sunday's show, they've been looking at a lot of the guys in the draft. So we'll see what happens here with Walsh, and if anything is brewing with Miami and Blair Walsh as the kicker. Two other stories, one of which is kind of weird, and I'm not going to get into it too much because I don't even know all the details. But it's just sort of something to file away in the back of your mind, as because this could become something soon, I guess. The state of Florida, not that long ago, passed a bill trying to change time zones. Essentially, last month they passed a bill that would move the state out of daylight savings time and observing the Eastern time zone into a year-round Atlantic Standard Time. Long story short, that means they would be 1 hour ahead of the rest of the country for most of the state of Florida, which means in certain parts of the year, any Sunday night football game, Monday night football game, or Thursday night football game wouldn't start at your normal 8:30 p.m. Eastern time like it does now. If you're in Florida, it would then start at 9:30 at night, which is really late. So if you live in South Florida and you see a Dolphins have a Monday night game, you know it ain't going to start till 9:30 your time. And by the time it's over, it's well past midnight. So they passed a bill. Now, to change time zones, and I don't know all the information on this, but I guess it has to be approved by Congress, which might be the holdup here. And they might, you know, pump the brakes and be like, this ain't happening. But the politicians in the state of Florida pushed through a bill last month, and they're trying to change time zones to move 1 hour ahead, meaning on New Year's Eve, when the clock strikes midnight on the East Coast, Florida's already going to be at 1 a.m. in the morning. So you're going to be 1 a.m. and essentially they will be 1 hour ahead of the rest of the country. And not only with the NFL, this is going to affect Heat games, Magic games, Lightning games, the Florida Panthers. This is going to affect the University of Miami, Florida State. I mean, it's going to affect sports in a negative way, a real negative way. To the point where the national broadcasters, like if you're the NFL, you're not going to hold a Monday night game in either Jacksonville, Miami, or Tampa, because it's going to start so late locally that the fans are either A, not going to go, or B, they're going to be leaving early because they got to go to work the next day, and this game's starting at 9:30 at night, and we know how long some of these games go to begin with. So this is just something to file away. I mean, who knows? I don't know enough about it, honestly. I'm just reading the report here in the news item. But if the state of Florida gets their way, and like I said, it needs Congress to approve this and pass, I guess, a bill, which, not to get into politics, getting Congress to grant anything, I mean, slim and none. So the odds here might be slim that this actually happens, but they're trying to get it in Florida. I guess Marco Rubio is one of the people behind it. He's trying to push it to get changed to Atlantic standard time year-round. And, I mean, look, that would be a nightmare for sports. It would be an absolute nightmare for sports, which I don't know if the politicians have really thought about that. And maybe they haven't, or maybe they just don't care. And if they don't care, that's fine. But they're going to lose a lot of events. A lot of events. Think about the Super Bowl bids possibly heading to Florida. Well, you got Tampa, Miami. Yeah, they have some on the books now, but the NFL might be like, we're never coming back for this. You guys are starting this game way too late here. Well, Super Bowl usually starts at 6:18 or so, so that wouldn't be the end of the world. But things like playoff games for the Heat, the Magic, the Panthers and stuff, Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, and especially now, Jacksonville's good, so you're going to want them on in prime time as much as possible. Tampa Bay's not awful. Miami's not awful. So those teams will be on those games in prime time, but they might be the road team now because they're not going to get home games with a 9:30 start time. So just something to file away, keep an eye on. We'll see where it goes. Like I said, I doubt anything will happen here. I think Congress might be like, why you guys want to change time zone? What's the point? No. I guess it's called the Sunshine State Act is the name of the bill. So we'll keep an eye on it, but just something to sort of file away. Last bit of news is and look, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this either. The Giants and Odell Beckham Jr. Sort of fighting over a new contract and such. And the New York Post has an article up saying if the Giants are looking to trade Odell Beckham, which they might be, were the four most likely landing spots. And I don't know how they got it's a number one landing spot, the Miami Dolphins. Because, let me just say this. A, it ain't going to happen, so don't even tweet me. Don't send me emails. Let's not even talk about it. Because Odell Beckham is not getting traded to the Miami Dolphins. And I can give you two simple reasons why. One, money. Now, I could probably stop at one, but money, money, money. The Miami Dolphins, if they didn't have money to pay Landry, they're sure as heck not going to have money to pay Odell. Now, yes, Odell Beckham's a much better player. Well, I won't say much better. He's more of a total package player in that he does have the speed. He can hit the home run ball, get deep, and all that stuff. So he's just more well-rounded and probably overall has a wider range of skills than Landry. Not that either one's bad, so don't take that the wrong way. It's not a knock on Landry. Just Odell, he sort of can do it all. That's number one. They just don't have the money. So number two, the Miami Dolphins have sat here now for a month and talked about culture change, getting the locker room better, all that stuff. If they then went out and they ran off Landry, Pouncey, Sue, all these guys, they said, we got to get a better locker room. That's why they ran off Williams, the running back. We got to get a better locker room. If they then went out and traded the farm for Odell Beckham Jr. and gave him a monstrous contract, they would look like the biggest idiots on God's green earth. Literally. Odell Beckham is a walking head case. This guy gets in fights with trainers, teammates. He's yelling at coaches. He's on the field. He's throwing haymakers at the guy is a walking head case. If Adam Gase couldn't control Jarvis Landry, there is no chance in hell he will control Odell Beckham Jr., especially when you write him a big fat check and pay him, you know, like one of the top three wide receivers in the league. This article is stupid. I don't know what the Giants are going to do with Odell Beckham. First you hear that they're not going to trade him. Then there's a report 10 minutes later that they would be open to the idea of trading him. And then there's a report saying, well, they really don't want to trade him. And then there's a report I'm reading just now saying they're not going to trade him. But if they do trade him, here are the team. I have no idea what's going on. That's the Giants' problem. Let them handle it. But I'm reading an article, and there's more than one, actually, but the one I'm just sort of referencing is from the New York Post, where the top five likely landing spots, or this article only has a top four. There was a second article, top five. Number one, Miami Dolphins. Under what world will the they can't even pay him. They couldn't pay Sue. Now they're going to trade for Odell Beckham. So now they're going to part with picks and then pay Odell Beckham on top of that. I mean, do these reporters even take 10 seconds to read what they're writing? It makes no sense. The Miami Dolphins could have re-signed Landry, could have held on to Sue, and not part with any picks, just write a check. But now, they're going to part with draft picks and then pay him on top of that. It makes zero sense. Do not waste your time entertaining possible trade scenarios, possible trade thoughts. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Do not waste your time. And this will probably be the last time I talk about it on this podcast because it's an utter waste of time. And it's just something that will not happen. Okay. So with that said, that's all the news for today and my thoughts on that. Next up is my chat with our draft guru, Brett Legassi, as we go over some of the linebackers and tight ends in this upcoming draft and how they might fit in with the Miami Dolphins and with what the Miami Dolphins do on offense and on defense. So everyone sit back and enjoy my conversation with Brett Legassi. I'm joined on the podcast by Brett Legassi from right here at DolphinsTalk.com. He is our draft expert. And last time we had him on the show, we talked about the running back and linebacker positions in the draft and what is still out there in free agency. Today, we're going to talk about linebackers and tight ends. As we know, those are two need positions for the Miami Dolphins still. So, Brett, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. So let's start off with the tight end position. And up on the website right now, Brett has two articles up, one for the linebackers and one for the tight ends, where he goes over what's left out there in free agency for the Miami Dolphins and who might be a fit. And then he goes over some of the tight ends in the draft in his article. So be sure to check that out. And he does the same thing, too, for linebackers. So check those out up on the website right now. But first, let's start off with the tight ends. The free agent market right now for tight ends is kind of weak. But what are some of the names out there who are available for Miami to sign who might be of interest to what Adam Gase is trying to do on offense?
Well, from what the research I've done with tight ends for the Dolphins have used the tight ends and they kept them in the most to block more than any other team in the NFL. So that tells me one of two things. One, the Dolphins are looking for guys who like to block first at tight end, which is the Mike March system, or they just didn't trust their tight ends too much in routes to really rely on them, which is true. If you watch Julius Thomas, he just did not look comfortable running anymore with that back injury. So I've developed a list of guys who are good blockers, but the guys left in free agency, mainly you're either going to get a really good blocker and an okay to not very good receiver, or you're going to get a really good receiver and a blocker. Well, the guys I came up with, keeping in mind the blocking first, Levine Toilolo, who came from the Falcons, he's a free agent. He's 6'8", 265. He was used more as a blocking tight end. Now, once they got Austin Hooper, they used him more as a tight end, and they used Levine Toilolo just as like an extra tackle in a sense. Good blocker, decent receiver, nothing special as a receiver, but he's the guy that in the red zone, he can be a threat at 6'8". He's got good size. I really think he could be a secret weapon in a sense in Adam Gase's offense. He's not a hot name right now, so he's a guy that may not get signed until maybe closer to the draft as free agency still develops on. But then I had guys, another young one. Now, Levine Toilolo is only 26, by the way. Now, another guy I liked him coming out of Notre Dame. He's not really done much in the NFL, but he's been a pretty good blocking tight end in the NFL, and that's Troy Nicholas. He's only 25. Now, keep in mind, Jared Cook didn't really light it up until he got to the Rams. He didn't really do much in Tennessee. Towards the end of his career there, Delanie Walker's another guy that really didn't come into his own until he's older. These tight ends really don't start coming into their own until they're really around the NFL a little bit more when they learn. There's so much to learn at tight end. Blocking, running routes, you got to learn offensive line drills and receiver drills. It's a lot to learn. So I think a guy like Troy Nicholas could be worth a shot at a cheap deal. He's 6'6", 270. He's got good size. He's strong. He is related to the Matthews brothers. He's actually the cousin to Clay Matthews. So he's got the bloodline. And he's a guy that I think you could bring in for cheap. Wouldn't cost much. Could be developed into a decent receiver. Doesn't have to be great, but at least he can block and be a good run blocker and a good pass blocker, which we know this offensive line has needed help there. Then there's two guys that are veterans that I like as just pure blocking guys, and one's a sneaky good receiver. The first one's Brandon Williams, who's 6'3", 260. He's 30 years old. He's a veteran, but he knows how to block. He knows how to play the game. He knows enough that he knows the nuances that Gase seems to like in veterans. But Jeff Cumberland, he's a guy that I would keep an eye on. 30 years old, 6'4", 260. I don't know. He got hurt with the Rams this year. Didn't really do much after that. But he was a sneaky receiver for the Jets. He's sneaky good at catching the football. Kind of reminded me of a poor man's Algie Crumpler a little bit. But I think he could be a guy that can come in as a veteran tight end to a bunch of young tight ends that this team has and be the best blocking tight end, kind of like Fasano. And that may be what they're looking for. But honestly, all they're going to get out of free agency is just another guy to fill Fasano's role. And those are like the four names I came up with that would fit and not cost a lot of money.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what I see here. None of these names will get you excited in any way, shape, or form. But can they fill that role of Anthony Fasano, which is essentially a number two tight end? Yeah, they probably can. And those are what you're looking at there. And we don't know yet if Anthony Fasano will be back. He really hasn't said anything about his future. Excuse me. It does sound like if he is going to play in the NFL next year, it probably would be with Miami, or else he probably will just retire, but no word yet. And we also don't know if the Miami Dolphins want him back even. But so those are the names in free agency. And like I said, not a lot there that will get you excited, but guys who are serviceable enough and can be a second tight end if you have a number one tight end. Now, for the Miami Dolphins to find a number one tight end, they might be looking towards a draft. And let's go over about six or seven guys who I think who are going to be good quality NFL tight ends here. Maybe not year one, of course. It might take them some time because, as you said, there's a lot to learn when you make the jump at tight end from the NCAA ranks when you head to the NFL. But the first name on the list, I think, who most people have ranked as their top tight end, you might not, but most people do, would be Hayden Hurst, who most people see going late round one or at some point in round two. What are your thoughts on Hayden Hurst?
I like Hayden Hurst. I am someone who's not typically bothered by age of a player, but he did play baseball a little bit, but he's so athletic. And the one thing I like about him is he's tough. He's physical. He's not afraid to block. He's a gritty blocker. He needs to work a little bit, but he's an adequate blocker. And you'll notice with the guys I've listed, there's a couple of them that are fantastic blockers, but there's three of them that are really good blockers or really good receivers that are adequate blockers that could be enough to start or make a difference on Sundays. And that Hayden Hurst is one of those guys. And you want to talk about athletic and do it all. From everything I've read, he's coachable. He'll do whatever he wants, whatever he's asked to do. And I really like Hayden Hurst's ability. You can move him around a little bit, flex him out. You can play him in line. And he has some hands. The dude catches everything. But he's athletic. His production was pretty high. I had him at an 8.2 out of a total of 10 for a production score, which is one of the highest ranked for tight ends. His size score was a 7.3, which, again, the average is 5, so he's well above the average. He's got a good size, 6'6", 250, or was he 6'5", 250. So he's got the size to play tight end. I really like Hayden Hurst as my favorite tight end in this draft, but he's my number two.
Yep, and what you mentioned there with the age, I think he will be 25 when the season starts, I think, if I remember correctly, yeah. Which to me – I know some people see that as a negative. I actually see it as a plus, and here's why. Because, A, like you said, he has played baseball, so he knows what it's like to be a professional on some level. And he was involved with another sport, so to speak, and saw what happens there. And, B, when you're young, you make a lot of, let's just say, poor choices off the field sometimes. And I think if you get a guy at 25, he might be a little bit more mature and might not fall into those traps. So the age thing does not scare me. And it's not like we're talking about a guy in his 30s. He's 25. That's still very, very young. So the fact he's not 21 or 22. Not going to hold it against him. It's not that big a deal. And that's more something that I think will hurt him when he is looking for his second NFL contract, not so much as a rookie. So that doesn't scare me with him. If some people don't have him number one, I would think the guy that they do have number one would probably be Mike Gesicki out of Penn State, another guy who will probably go second round. And from what I have seen of him, he is a pretty much a pure receiver first. Talk about him a little bit.
All right, so you'll notice in the article, Mike Gesicki's not in there. And just a disclaimer, that does not mean I don't like him as a prospect because I love Mike Gesicki as a prospect. In fact, I love what James Franklin is doing there in Penn State. So I really like Mike Gesicki. He's a freak athlete, which we saw at the combine. And like you said, he's a pure receiver at this point. He's going to have to get stronger. He's going to have to bulk up and block. Now, the only reason he's not in here in my article, because my article is more of a what if they're looking for guys who at first can block and then they can work with the receiver. But he is a fantastic player. The only knock on him really is his size as far as weight goes. Is he, because he's longer. So is he strong enough to hold up at the point of attack? He's going to have to bulk up the block a little bit. His ceiling is probably the highest out of just about everybody. He's still not my number one at the moment because I look at the complete package of blocking included for tight end position, but he's a red zone threat for sure. You can create mismatches with him. You can put him out wide. And it wouldn't surprise me to see the Dolphins draft him if that's what they're looking for, because he can be that guy instead of drafting a tight end and a big wide receiver. They can just draft Gesicki and use him as a wide receiver and then maybe draft later on in mid-rounds to get a guy who's more of a blocking guy. But I think with Gesicki, he definitely offers you a good receiving option, a guy who's going to create mismatches, and someone who's going to be really difficult to cover down the seam and in the red zone. And that's something that the Dolphins have lacked.
Absolutely. And if they were to bring back someone like a Fasano, they could use him more as the guy in the run blocking game, and then use Mike Gesicki more as the receiver, probably in year one at least. So that might be a mesh that they could also look at as they're trying to fill out this roster. Another tight end who gets a lot of talk, he's also not in your list, but is Mark Andrews of Oklahoma, probably a guy who will go round two, maybe round three. Talk a little bit about Mark Andrews.
Now, I think as far as receiver-wise, Mark Andrews is the most ready tight end in this draft. However, again, he's not much of a blocker, but he's very good at presenting himself to the quarterback when the quarterback's in trouble. You know, when he had Baker Mayfield, as soon as Mayfield's in trouble, he was looking for Andrews quite a bit. Every time I watched film and Mayfield was rushed out of the pocket, he knew he could rely on getting the ball to Mark Andrews, which was something I actually thought was very heads up of him, very mature player of him. But again, Andrews is a pretty good athlete. He's not an excellent athlete Mike Gesicki is, but he's a good enough athlete to play tight end. He gets open. He knows how to make himself available to the quarterback, which becomes the quarterback's best friend, and we all know that Tannehill loves to get the ball to his tight end when he had Charles Clay. So that kind of really works in the NFL. The tight end is always a young quarterback's best friend or any quarterback's best friend. So I think he's going to relate right away as far as receiving goes. He does need to work on his blocking, but he's got a little bit better build than Gesicki, so I think he was going to be a little bit better at blocking sooner. But again, he's going to have to work on his blocking and get a little stronger at the point of attack. But as far as receiver goes, Mark Andrews, to me, is the most pro-ready.
Yep, and one of the guys who will probably go a little bit later, probably around 3 to 5, who you have on your list, who I am actually a big fan of, is the kid from Wisconsin, Troy Fumagalli. I hope I said that right. He's looking like a guy who'll go around 3 to round 5. I believe he's missing a finger, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah, but I have talked to some people who have watched him play, and they're like, don't let that be something that sort of scares you off, because he catches everything in sight. Yes, he had his index finger amputated as an infant, but this guy, he catches everything in sight, I've been told. And I've seen him play a few times and have been very impressed by him. Talk about him a little bit.
Well, we're this draft, we have a kid that's phenomenal without a hand. So, I mean, a kid without a finger is not a big deal. So,
exactly.
you know, but no, I love Troy Fumagalli. I mean, I did a write-up for the Wisconsin-Miami bowl game, and Fumagalli was the first name I actually listed as an option to watch. You know, I love Fumagalli as one of the most complete tight ends in this draft. When you look at his size, he's 7.5 out of 10 for his size by my grade scale. And then his production based on my grade scale is 8.83. Now, I took the last 10 years, all the tight ends drafted, even tight ends not drafted, all the draft eligible tight ends that declare for the draft, and put them all in a pot, developed the average. And he's at 8.83. So he is more than productive in an offense that didn't really throw the football a lot. Now, keep in mind, that was a power offense, outside zone, run the ball down your throat. And he fit perfectly. He was a very good blocker, very consistent blocker, but he was a consistent receiver. He knew how to find holes in the defense. He knew how to sit. He was, again, another guy like Andrews, he was a quarterback's best friend. And when you look at a guy like Fumagalli, he doesn't have the athletic traits that a Mike Gesicki does. However, he is good enough to sneak out in the routes and get open and just consistently do his job. And he is not going to flinch catching the ball over the middle. He's going to catch the football, take a shot. And his blocking at the second level is one of the best in this draft at the tight end position. When he gets his hands on linebackers, he's actually very good at blocking in the open field. And with all of the screen passes the Dolphins run, he could be a real big piece to that. We're opening up the run lanes for whether the running back or receiver screen. But Fumagalli is one of my favorite tight ends in this draft because he's a complete package, and I think he can step in right away and be a good tight end. He won't be great right away, but I think he can step in and be serviceable right away.
Absolutely. He's one of the guys I wouldn't mind if Miami goes elsewhere round one, round two, maybe even round three. He could be a guy who's there with one of their picks in round four, who if they took, I'd be very happy with. And I think that might be the spot for him. So he's a guy I would like if Miami did draft, because I think he just looks like a solid football player. Some guys just have that look where you know they're not going to be someone who won't make it on that level. He might not be a star in the NFL, but you know he'll be a quality football player. And he's got that look every time I watch him play. So I like him a lot. Let's talk about the kid from South Dakota State. Dallas Goedert, what are your thoughts on him? And I know some people love him, and the people who love him love him. But the one thing with him was the competition he played against at South Dakota State. So talk about him a little bit.
Well, see, he is a hot and cold prospect for people. And you're right. It's exactly because of his competition. Now, if we can say that Carson Wentz is worth the first overall pick in the same level of competition, and you know, why can't Dallas there be? Yeah, so what I really like about him is he does have good size of 6'5", 255. Now, I keep seeing people compare him to Zach Ertz, and I can't argue that. He's a very good blocker for when he's in space. In line, he's an adequate blocker. Again, that's why he made my list, because he's more of a complete package. Very productive, scored a perfect 10 out of 10 on our production score, which because of him, I'm going to have to change that score a little bit because then why should he get a 10? But, I mean, he's productive. Just flat-out productive. There's no way around it. Runs good routes. He's very quick at the tight end position. He's going to be a difficult cover. He's a guy, I think, that, to me, my opinion, he's my number one tight end. And blocking is very important to me. And that's why, because he's an adequate blocker, but he's also a very good athlete, catches the ball, and there's been quite a few times on tape I've watched him line up out wide, block a linebacker, and really get good push on the linebacker. Not just hold up, but actually drive the linebacker out. Now, that's where we question, is it level competition? Could he do that at a higher level? Could he do that in the NFL? I don't see why not. He has good technique when he blocks, which is really good to see. A guy who's 6'5 that actually sinks into his block and power blocks and drives through, power steps through. I really like what I see with him. I think he's basically the complete package, and he might be, if you watch what Ertz and Kelce have done, he's very similar to those two as a receiver, but I also think that he offers better blocking, more like Ertz, less like Kelce as far as the blocking goes. He's my number one. I would love him in the draft, and I've seen him going the bottom of the first to the fourth round. So I see him about second round. I see all the tight ends, the top tight ends in the second to third.
I do too. And yeah, I've seen him go late round one. I've seen him go round four as well. Like I said, who love him, love him. And the people who aren't in love are like, I'm just not going to take him. So it's all over the map with him, and we'll see what happens. Right. I think though, with him, with Hurst, with Gesicki, those guys will probably all go round two, and there'll probably be a run on tight ends. And the Miami Dolphins might be part of that run because, as we've said, tight end is a major need for them. And I think some of these other guys, like Fumagalli and stuff, they're probably round three, round four, round five-ish range, all depending on where teams rank them. Two more names before we wrap this up. Dalton Schultz, who I know you like a lot, and I've seen him play a little bit. I can't say I have seen him a lot, but tell me why you like him so much, and what does he bring to the table?
All right, so Dalton Schultz, again, he is a well-coached player. Now, a little bit, his weight suggests he's a little light, so he's probably going to have to gain a little bit. He's 6'6", 242, but he's your typical Stanford-style tight end as of recent. But he's more, again, he's more closer to the Zach Ertz style that they had, that they used at Stanford, where he's a good receiver, but he's tough and he's physical as a blocker. And he is not afraid to block. He's old school when it comes to blocking. I really like what I see out of him. And I think he's a draft board riser. He might climb draft boards quietly and someone's going to take him a little earlier. But what I like about him is, he follows his fundamentals. Of course, what else would you expect from David Shaw? He knows how to coach the fundamentals on his players. So he's fundamentally sound in everything he does, his route running, his blocking. He almost seems like a perfectionist. But his production is not very high as a receiver, which tells me they used him to block a lot. At 6'4", 242, you don't expect that to be a blocking tight end, but the kid's a blocker. So first and foremost, NFL teams look at that. Can he block? Because when they put a tight end on the field, they don't want to tip their hand and say, oh, he's on the field, so we're throwing it. No, they want to be able to say, well, we can run out of this formation or we can throw it out of this formation. So with that tight end on the field, they're not tipping their hand. And he's one of those guys, I think, that can do that. And he's got the ability to catch the ball without a doubt. He was just underused. And I think once teams figure out that this kid can actually catch, once they do the private workouts and figure out that this kid actually is the real deal, he's actually more athletic and running his routes, I think he'll climb draft boards quietly for a lot of teams. And I expect him to go between rounds two and three. I expect him to be a day two prospect with ease. But he's one of the guys I like, and it's because of that, because he's a complete package, but people don't know about his receiving ability because they didn't use him a lot as a receiver.
Yeah, and that sort of rolls into the last name I want to talk about, who I think is a real sleeper in this draft, and that is Ryan Izzo from Florida State. He wasn't used a lot down there as a receiver, and he's more of a blocker first. But this is a guy who will probably go, you know, round five, round six or so, somewhere in that range. And I think it's a total sleeper, someone who does compare a little bit to Anthony Fasano in some ways. Talk a little bit about Ryan Izzo and what you like about him.
Oh, what I like about Ryan Izzo is, again, he was not used in college. He has good size, 6'5", 256, you know, so well above average size. His production was actually not very high because he wasn't used. He had a 5.9, he was barely above average for production, so this kid just was not used a lot. Now, one thing people need to keep in mind with stuff like that is, just because he wasn't used, that doesn't mean he can't do it. That just means they relied on him. He was relied on as a blocking tight end. And a damn good one, too. I think he's one of the best blocking tight ends in this draft, but I think he's a quietly good receiver. No, he's not as good as Dallas Goedert or Mike Gesicki or any of those guys. However, he is good enough, like Fasano, where he can be an issue to cover. He can be a problem in the red zone. He can come up with the tough first downs. And he's got a thick frame, too. He's built like Fasano. He's built like those bigger tight ends. So, honestly, it all depends on what what Gase's offense is looking for. And if they're looking to go more like the Mike March style system, or a little bit more of a tight end who could do a little bit of both, Izzo is very much like Fumagalli, where he's built like that NFL tight end, the Mark Bavaras of the Giants, the Bill Parcells style tight end. And I think he could fit that role. And he's, again, he needs to work on his route running, but as far as catching the football only, he's actually a good receiver, but he needs to work on that route running. Once he gets that down, he could be a fantastic tight end in the NFL, and I do think he could be a sleeper. And we're talking a guy that's probably going to go in the fifth round. And if you draft him and Fumagalli, or him and Goddard, you might have yourself a nice pair of tight ends for a few years.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. And so those are the guys at tight end to keep an eye on in this upcoming draft. Let's shift now to linebackers. And, of course, linebacker is a big need for the Miami Dolphins. And first and foremost, I know when we talk about Raekwon McMillan, I sort of count him as part of this draft class because we really didn't see him last year. So, I mean, yes, he was drafted last year, obviously, but he didn't play at all, really. I mean, he ran down one punt and then he got hurt in a preseason game. So I count him as sort of like a little extra pick of this upcoming class because we're going to get to see him really for the first time in 2018. So you can sort of pencil him in as part of this class. And so obviously the big names who are always talked about, who will probably go, you know, top 10, top 12 or so, are Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech and Roquan Smith. Talk about those guys real quick. I don't want to spend a ton of time on them because everyone has sort of talked about them at length. And we sort of know, look, they're both great players and they're going to get picked really, really high. And they might each be off the board when Miami has their first pick. But talk about them a little bit here and what they each bring to the table.
Well, yeah, those guys kind of get talked to, so everybody's blue in the face. And I mean, for good reason. Those two are both phenomenal athletes. Tremaine Edmonds is only 18 years old, so we're looking at a kid, or 19 years old, excuse me, we're looking at a kid that's so young that still has time to grow, and physically, he's probably still growing. So, I mean, that's very intriguing, and I watch a lot of Virginia Tech, and I've been watching him since Mike Vick, so I know what we're getting at, what you get out of Edmonds, and he's athletic, he's big, he's strong, and it's, honestly, he's a total package, he just needs to put it all together. And I think it's the closest thing that you'll see to a guy like physically traits-wise to Brian Urlacher and Patrick Willis. As far as mental part of the game, that's still coming for him. Those guys were far and away ready in the NFL when they were drafted. He's not to that level. But physically, I think he is. Now, Roquan Smith, he is a guy, or Raekwon Smith, I don't actually know how to say his name.
Yeah, I'm not sure myself.
He's bigger than I thought at 233, I think he weighed in at, which I had him more like 220 range. But it's probably because he's so fast. Now, he doesn't take on blocks like you'd like him to, but he is fast enough to get through blocks. So it's the same thing with some guys that I've seen in the past, like Deion Jones, or the kid out of Vanderbilt last year. They're smaller, but they can get through blocks. And the guys like Smith are very good because they're instinctive. And if his instincts are as good as they are in film, then you don't have to worry about him taking on blocks so much. It's just when he does face a physical team, like, let's say, the Bills, if the offensive lineman does get their hands on him, he's probably not going to be disengaged. So he needs to work on that strength or a little bit of hand skills to keep himself clean. But Smith and Edmonds, I mean, you're getting fantastic players. And if they were to be drafted, let's say, at 11, you're getting probably the best player available, the best athlete available at that spot.
Yep.
But those guys, I do like it for good reason.
Yep, absolutely. Now let's get to some of the other guys in case Miami goes somewhere else in round one and then they start to look at linebackers, you know, in the next few rounds. Probably the next best linebacker on the list, someone who could go late round one or at some point in round two, would be Rashawn Evans from Alabama. Is he strictly more of a middle linebacker or can he play on the outside?
From what I've seen of Evans, he's actually he's quick enough to play outside linebacker. One thing to always keep in mind with Saban's 3-4 defense, it can be old-fashioned, straight-up 3-4-2 inside linebackers, and sometimes it's more of a flexibility. The past couple of years, he's been more or less running like a 4-3 under with his 3-4 defense. So Evans has played more of an outside linebacker role. His linebackers are typically versatile, and Evans is a guy I believe can play inside and outside. I do believe he could play a strong side backer, especially in a base formation. And I think that's would be perfect for a rookie linebacker like him to come in and play the strong side backer in the base formation and maybe come off on nickel. Although he is an effective blitzer, which a lot of Alabama linebackers are. But he's a very effective blitzer, so he could be used in different packages and different formations. And I think he could play outside. I think he's got enough athleticism to play outside. But I think there might be some limitations to his game as far as, like, if you're going to run a cover two, I don't think he fits outside. In a wide nine, I think he could fit outside.
Okay. And yeah, that is and I know he's a very good player. And he comes from Alabama, who has pumped out a lot of quality linebackers in the past, you know, 5-6 years or so. So he is someone to watch. Should he fall in round – if he fell to Miami – in round number two, I would hope they would jump all over him because that would be a steal at that point. I'm not sure if that will happen. He might be long gone by then, but he is someone who I think will be a good NFL player. The next name I want to talk about is Malik Jefferson from Texas. And I've actually talked to some people who, you know him a little bit and such. And look, he has got the physical size, and he's got all the stuff you want out of a player. He looks the part. Walking off the bus, if you saw him, you're going, wow, that guy must be great. The knock on him, I've learned, is how much he actually loves the sport of football and is his heart into the game, which that is the worst knock anybody can have heading into the draft because that will scare teams away quickly. So talk about Malik Jefferson a little. I know down there, he was one of the top recruited guys that they landed in recent years, but he really didn't perform to the level they thought of on the field. So talk about him a little bit, and what do you know about Malik Jefferson?
As far as him not loving the game, I've read about as much as you have with that, so I'm not sure.
Nobody really knows. So
as far as his physical traits, you're right. If I saw him in person, I'm like, holy crap, this guy is – you wouldn't have to tell me he's an NFL player. I could just guess by looking at him. The dude is just physically built. He's a gifted built. He looks like an old-school NFL linebacker, like an old-school – and he plays like it sometimes too. When he's attacking downhill, he will run through the ball carrier. Once he knows where that ball is, he will run through it. The problem is – his instincts are questionable. They don't know if he has a true NFL IQ, and maybe it's because he doesn't really care that much about it, or maybe it's just because he's still learning. So for him, he's very explosive, he's very strong, and he will explode through the ball. He's a very sure tackler, which I do like about him. And when he plays downhill, it's very much like Kiko Alonso in a sense. When he plays downhill, he's very good. When everything's in front of him, he's very good. When he blitzes, he's good. When he has to read and react, when he has to guess where the ball is going, at that point is when he struggles. But I do think he has the range to play inside and outside. He's a physical linebacker. I love his tenacity. When the light bulb comes on for him, he's going to be a fantastic linebacker if it comes on because he has all the tools. It's just he needs to learn how to read his keys, where the ball carrier is going. And once he knows that, he'll explode through. So it's kind of like Tremaine Edmonds in a sense, where the sky's the limit, except he doesn't have quite that athleticism, but he has that tenacity and good enough athlete to say that once I find that ball, I'm taking that ball carried down. I mean, he ran a 40 in 4.52, which is a really good speed for a linebacker. And then at 27 reps on the bench press, that's insane for a guy at 236. So he's strong and fast. It's just a matter of putting it all together for him. And once he does, or if he does, he could be a fantastic linebacker in the NFL. But watching his tape this year versus last year, I became a big fan of his game. So I think in the NFL, if they use him as an attack linebacker, which I think he fits really well for what the Dolphins use Kiko this year, I think he could be a good fit there.
Absolutely. And I think it's just a matter of fact of whatever team is going to select him, they better do their homework on him and make sure he does, you know, love the sport essentially. And that team better have a veteran and strong linebackers coach who can get every ounce of what is in him out of him. It's because you don't hear that about a lot of guys, that they don't love the sport. But so when you do, it is a major red flag to make you think, hey, who would even say that about him? But that is the thing on him, so you got to be careful. And he's got to go to the right spot, I think, to be successful. Maybe it's Miami, maybe it's not. Who knows? But that's on him. The one kid I like a lot is a kid from Iowa, Josie Jewell. I just think he's a great linebacker and just a solid linebacker all around. Talk about him a little bit.
All right, so Josie Jewell is the most distinctive linebacker in this draft, and he is one of my favorites in this draft. He's old school, and I love old school kind of football players that fit into the new school way of doing things. And he knows where the ball's going. And as soon as he sees it, he trusts his instincts and he takes off. He's not the most gifted athlete at all. He ran a 4.82 40, and we were just talking about a guy who ran a 4.52. But if you know where the ball's going, it does not matter where that ball is going or how fast you are. If you know where it's going and you can react before it gets there, you have just as good of a chance as a guy who doesn't know where it's going that can run a 4.4. And he's got good size, a 6'1", 235, but he's strong enough at the point of attack to shed block. And he's quick enough at the point of, because he knows where the ball is going, to beat blockers to the point where the ball is. He might be, to me, he might be the most NFL-ready linebacker, in my opinion, without needing to work on much. Maybe get a little bit stronger because he only did 18 reps on the bench, but that's not really a big deal. He's still strong when he's on the field. But my partner on my website is a big fan of his, and he wouldn't leave me alone until I watched the tape of Josie Jewell. And then afterwards, I watched one game, and I said, okay, I see what you're talking about. He's just a downhill linebacker, and I love watching him play. Very consistent tackler, very good open field tackler, too.
Yep, absolutely. He's someone I like a lot, and if Miami were to land him in rounds either 3 or 4, be totally fine with that, because I think he could probably get on the field right away and help out, I think. The next guy I want to talk about is a linebacker from USC, and I'm not even going to try to say his name because I have no idea how you say this name. It looks like an eye chart, his name. Literally, it's just a bunch of letters next to each other. So if you can say his name, God bless you. So talk about the linebacker from USC. And I'm not even going to try. What's his name first?
I believe you pronounce it Uchenna Nwosu. And now his name is nowhere near as bad as the other kid from Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's worse. That's worse.
Yeah, that one's going to be worse.
Uchenna Nwosu. Actually, okay.
Yeah, Uchenna Nwosu. I could be wrong, but I believe that's how I heard it before.
It sounds right, so we're going with it.
Let's go with it. He is a guy that he's versatile. He's very athletic, and he wasn't on my radar for a while. And, I was doing film breakdowns and stuff. I get to players as I get to them in different positions. But he's a guy that the Dolphins actually did have a sit down and meet with. And he's not doesn't fall in the in-state. So that means, to me, if they're going to go with anybody that goes against their count, then it might as well be a guy they're serious about. He's got good size, 6'3", 251. He's got good arm length, 33-inch arms. And his hands are actually pretty big at 9 inches. He's got all the size of an NFL linebacker. And the one thing I like, he's very athletic. He's very loose through the hips. He's very versatile to play inside linebacker, outside, although I do believe he's outside. He's a three-down linebacker. He can cover and he can blitz, which I really like. Plays a little smaller than 250, but he still has the strength at the point of attack to shed blocks, to take on blockers, which I really like. But when you blitz him off the edge, sometimes he gets caught up against his offensive tackles. When you blitz him in the middle, he knows how to get skinny and through. When he blitz him off the edge, sometimes he gets tangled up with tackles and he can't get off the blocks. But he's very smooth in his movements. He doesn't labor in his movements. Nothing seems like he's difficult to move in space. He's very good and confident tackling in space. Plays with a very high motor, which I loved watching him at USC. And, in fact, he seemed to be the heartbeat of USC's defense when they would play tough and physical. And in the bowl game against Ohio State, USC wasn't playing good, but you couldn't tell him that. He was playing hard against Ohio State. He was playing as if the game was still in reach at the very last second. So he's a guy I do like. He has a high motor. He's very coachable. But to me, he's got all the athletic traits, the size, the strength. I think he could be a sneaky good draft pick, in my opinion.
Yep. And the last guy I want to talk about, I don't believe he was in your article, but I know he's gotten a lot of talk about him recently, is the kid from Boise State, Leighton Vander Esch. Now, the thing with him is he's only had 1 year of production, of real production at in the NCAA ranks there. Is he pretty much just a one-year wonder who just came out of the scene late? Or is there a lot there which we should be excited about? Because I've seen him going as high as the second round in a lot of mock drafts by the quote-unquote experts and stuff. But talk about him a little bit here as we wind this up.
Yeah, I'm actually with you there. I think all the tools are there with him. He's got the size, the length. He's got everything about him. 6'4", 256, he's got long arms, big hands. And so he's just as athletic as Nwosu is. But the production, for me, it's not quite there because it is a one-year player. I don't know if he's a one-year wonder, but I know in the year that he did play, I know he showed quite a bit of versatility, a lot of athletic ability to not only play like a tweener linebacker, but to also be able to play stand-up coverage, blitz off the outside. He showed a lot of versatility, and much like Nwosu, he has all the tools. But I'm just concerned because I haven't seen enough of him to really say that he is going to be a legitimate talent. But as far as athleticism and what you see this year, he's first round as far as that goes. However, I haven't seen enough of him to say that he's a surefire first round pick. I think he's going to be a good player if he has the right coaching.
Yeah, and look, it was a hell of a year he had. I mean, it really was. His 2017 season was a hell of a year, but pretty much that's all he's ever done. And there's nothing wrong with that. Some guys come on the scene late in their NCAA time and stuff, but it's just I'm just not sure because, A, it is still, at the end of the day, a smaller school. I know they've had some success in recent years, but at that school, I don't know. I mean, I'm just always a little nervous when a guy only has one big year, and it's his last year in college. But, yeah, he has all the tools, and he probably will get picked early. I think he might be the fourth or fifth linebacker off the board, probably middle of round two, late round two, somewhere around there. So someone will take him pretty high. He just scares me a little bit. But we'll see how that goes. So, Brett, thanks for coming on the show again today. So now with you, we have done running backs, offensive line, tight end, and linebacker. I think the next show we'll do is we'll break down the quarterback spot, which I know fans always love talking about that spot, and everyone has strong thoughts on each guy, and there's a lot of guys in this draft. Obviously, you got the big four, and then you sort of got Lamar Jackson is like that next grouping, I would say, all by himself. Then after that, there's a bunch of guys from rounds 2, 3, and 4. We'll talk about Mike White, Mason Rudolph, and that grouping. So I think the next show, and that might be a long one with the quarterbacks, we'll probably just do the quarterbacks and cover them maybe in like a week or two. But thanks for coming on the show. And as I said, everyone head to the website and check out Brett's latest articles as he has some written stuff up about the linebackers and tight ends. And thanks for coming on, Brett.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Anytime.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.